Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And we start with the good. And the reason Jim was not on the Three Martini Lunch yesterday is because he and a select group of other conservative bloggers were meeting with Bobby Jindal at the Heritage Foundation. And Jim wrote all about it in the Morning Jolt today, talking about the different ways that Bobby Jindal is kind of tipping his hand that he's at least deeply thinking about a presidential bid in 2016, and how if he does, he's someone that everyone should certainly listen to very carefully and consider, because he's got a lot of impressive things to say, Jim. So what struck you most about a governor that you've been impressed with for a long time?
Sure. One is that, and I recognize I'm a little bit different from maybe not everybody in the conservative world views things the way I do. I'm a little wary whenever a guy comes along and is saying all the right things but doesn't have a terribly long record, particularly in an executive position. Because my attitude is, look, anybody can say the right things. You can sign all the I won't raise taxes pledges. You can check all the box. You can fill out the questionnaire the way you're supposed to. You can go to CPAC and give speeches with lots of applause lines. And that's all nice to have. But to me, a real question is, so what have you done? What have you really been able to accomplish? And, as I put in the Jolt today, if your measuring stick is what has a leader done from when they start in the position to when they've finished in the position, I think Bobby Jindal's 2 terms as governor of Louisiana is a really strong argument that this guy could be a very effective president. Obviously, running a state is different from running the country. Lots of challenges there. He hasn't been as popular in his second term as he was in his first term. But let's face it, Louisiana, post-Katrina, was in a really horrible shape when he stepped in 2007. In addition to dealing with the post-Katrina issues, he had the Deepwater Horizon disaster. And even more, when you talk to Jindal, he'll tell you the explosion and the leak of the oil into the Gulf was one crisis. The moratorium on drilling was a second major crisis for the people of Louisiana, because it just was an economic full stop to basically everything on the Gulf. You can only imagine what that does to communities when all of a sudden, hey, that industry that just about everybody in town works for? Yeah, it's not allowed to drill anymore. Jindal is one of those rare guys who can be folksy and provide, funny, college football stories and things like that, but who also understands the details of policy backwards and forwards. We all know that Republican presidential candidates either get tarred with old, dumb, or evil, or some combination of those. Romney was evil. He's giving steelworkers cancer and things like that. McCain was old. Palin was dumb. Reagan was old and dumb. It's always some variation of those critiques. I think it's idiotic. I don't think you can say Bobby Jindal is dumb. I mean, Matt Iglesias said it, but that just shows that any idiot can believe that. They'll try to say that he's evil. He's not that old, obviously. He's, for better or for worse, only a few years older than you and I, Greg. It's kind of weird that we're theoretically approaching presidential age. And then you have, they'll try to argue that he's evil. And I think he does a pretty good job of dispelling that. The only thing I would note, and I recognize this, is that I've learned how to understand Bobby Jindal, but the rest of the country may have a learning curve in that he speaks, I'm going to guess, anywhere from 80 to 90,000 words a minute. and he has a thick, Louisiana drawl. And it just, periodically I play the tape, then I stop and I go back to play it again slower to make sure I understood what he said. You can tell this is a guy whose mind is racing whenever he's discussing a policy issue, and he's, wants to get in this point and that point and all that sort of things. There's an old saying of being, 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. Jindal's answers to a basic question like, what do you think of Obamacare? Go on for paragraphs and paragraphs. And it's not filibustering. He really knows all this stuff and wants to tell you all this stuff. I don't think he's ever really boring, despite what perhaps some other columnists in attendance may have concluded yesterday. My pitch to Republicans is, look, it's pretty obvious he's running. He said he's still thinking about it. He's praying on it. But you don't put out national policies on health care and energy policy if you're not interested in running for president. So Bobby Jindal's almost certainly going to run, and I'd really like Republicans to give him a serious consideration. I'm not saying he's the perfect candidate. I'm not saying he's the ideal guy, but I just kind of feel like having him on that stage would elevate the game of everybody, because there was a Republican Governors Association event maybe 2-3 years ago, Bob McDonald was featured, insert booze here. Nikki Haley was there, and Bobby Jindal. And they were asked kind of was about Obamacare or the stimulus. There was some question from reporters. And McConnell gave a perfectly fine, brief, 3x5 note card answer. Haley gave a similar one, very much focused on how things were going in her state of South Carolina. And then they turned to Jindal, and Jindal offers the term paper. And it's detailed. He's citing statistics, and he's taken us, deep down, like to the deep water horizon levels of detail of this particular issue. And somebody said, well, there you go. It's the football captain, the homecoming queen, and the class nerd, describing Donald Haley, Nikki Haley, and Bobby Jindal. That may be a little bit mean, but I think we've all seen these debates. We've heard them, and it's way too often. Candidates will revert back to their talking points. They'll revert back to whatever message they want to come out of it. And, to pick one random example, if you ask Michelle Bachmann what she had for breakfast this morning, last cycle, she was going to tell you, we're going to make Barack Obama a one-term president, and that would be the crowd in the audience would go nuts. And people people thought that was a good answer, but I'm not so sure that it was. I hope he gets serious consideration. For people who want to say that I'm in the tank for him, fine, whatever. I just kind of feel like this is the kind of candidate Republicans need to put forward there, because we need to reassure the public that we are thinking seriously about these things and not just relying on bumper sticker slogans.
On to the bad and crazy martinis, both connected to the ISIS threat in a couple of different ways. Yesterday, before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, were testifying about the plan to take out ISIS. They, of course, were defending the president's approach that they would mainly focus on airstrikes and advising, and there wouldn't be boots on the ground. But then the issue got pressed a little bit further by Rhode Island Senator Jack Reed, and here is what Dempsey had to say.
The folks on the ground are in a very much a combat advisory role. They are not participating in direct combat. There is no intention for them to do so. I've mentioned, though, that if I found that circumstance evolving, that I would, of course, change my recommendation. An example. If the Iraqi security forces and the Pesh were at some point ready to retake Mosul, a mission that I would find to be extraordinarily complex, it could very well be part of that particular mission to provide close combat advising or accompanying for that mission. But for the day-to-day activities that I anticipate will evolve over time, I don't see it to be necessary right now.
And so the circumstances could warrant it in certain cases, Jim. And while we might not like that idea, it does show that that might be necessary to win. And unfortunately, what we've heard from the administration is we're willing to go this far to win.
Yeah, I think the Washington Post page A1 lead story put it pretty well. It just says it in one paragraph right here. The nation's top military officer raised the possibility Tuesday that U.S. troops could become involved in ground attacks against the Islamic State, despite repeated pledges to the contrary from President Obama. I think that says it all. The president is saying, look, if you like your air-only strategy, you can keep your air-only strategy. Right now, we want two contradictory things. We want a lot of dead ISIS, and we want them eliminated as a threat to Americans, and we want no ground troops, and we want absolute minimal U.S. casualties. Those are both good things to want. Those are both things we should have. We shouldn't be reckless with the lives of our troops. On the other hand, you can't get A without some risk to B. And we kind of have to ask ourselves, is it more important, how much risk are we willing to live with here? The answer from Dempsey suggests we're willing to, live with considerably more risk than Obama's statement would suggest. And possibility one is that they're on different pages and they don't actually agree on what the policy is, which is not reassuring. Or alternately, the president knows that we're going to use ground troops at one point or another in a limited fashion, and he knows that the risk is higher than that, but he knows it would be a political hit to acknowledge those risks, so he's downplaying them. Both of those are very bad options.
On to the crazy now, and in terms of the ISIS threat coming to our shores, there's a number of different ways that folks think that ISIS could be exploiting our vulnerabilities. One, of course, is the southern border and the fact that it's pretty easy to get across there. There are a bunch of people of all ages proved that this summer. So Sean Hannity last night was speaking with Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, congressman, and of course he is one of the leading advocates for immigration reform that a lot of conservatives would refer to as amnesty. And Sean Hannity was basically asking Luis Gutierrez if he would support legislation that, first of all, would just secure the border without some of the other legalization aspects of the comprehensive bill.
You can pass a bill, secure the border. Would you support that?
No, because no. Okay. It would be folly. Okay. It would be folly.
In the meantime,
I would be derelict
every
in
day
my
you
duty
no,
to protect
every day you don't
America.
Pass that bill.
No,
you're,
no,
you're demanding in my
you're
duty.
Demanding
it would
amnesty.
Sound great. It sounds good.
It doesn't
good.
Sound great.
It sounds good.
If you don't
it
do it,
it's a dereliction
make.
Of duty, sir.
Sean,
it's
this
a
is the 911 commission report. They said this is what they had, their ability to get valid U.S. visas.
I got
That's
it.
Why they were chosen
do
to
both.
Come and attack us.
I'm
they
agreeing
don't have
with
visas
you.
To come
do
across
that
the border.
And secure the
why
border.
Hire a coyote?
Secure
you can fight
the
first
border.
Class.
So Gutierrez saying that the border is not the greatest threat for how ISIS members could enter the country. Hannity saying do both. And obviously a lot of crosstalk. It's hard to hear what either one of them is saying. But Jim, the idea that securing the border by itself would be a dereliction of duty is a major head scratcher.
On my desk right now, I am reading a book by Mike Gonzalez, who is a policy analyst, a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's got a new book coming out called A Race for the Future, How Conservatives Can Break the Liberal Monopoly on Hispanic Americans. It's not really so much a campaign book, but a lot of it, at least so far, has been kind of a history of how we got here in terms of the Latino experience in America and a good portion of it is immigration. And it's kind of this fascinating observation that, and I kind of knew this, but I kind of didn't really know this, that illegal immigration really didn't exist until 1960. They had something called the Bracero program, which basically means, you know, it was very easy to get a guest worker visa. They've been around, I guess it was from 1944 to 1964. Basically, you could, showed up at the border, said you wanted to work in America. They gave you a guest worker visa. You went over there, you did, harvested fruit or agricultural work or whatever it was, and then you went back to Mexico. And that worked for a good 20 years. And then in 1965, Congress passes the Immigration and Nationality Act, and that's where things kind of grow out from that. Now, he also talks about the cultural changes of the 1960s and stuff. But what's kind of fascinating is that one of the common responses to illegal immigration is to say, well, why don't we have a guest worker program? Turns out we do have a guest worker program. We have like 32 different guest worker programs, all with different contradictory paperwork and red tape and regulations and all kinds of stuff like that. It seems like there's a solution to be found here if the people who are coming here want to work and only want to work. If they want to come here and people here want to make them citizens as quickly as possible so that they will vote, that's when all of a sudden you realize, okay, this is not about improving the country. This is not about trying to make America a better place. This is about building democratic voters. And it's that bad faith argument that I think poisons the well for so much of this discussion. I think it's probably a good example that, Gutierrez can make the argument that open borders is the more secure choice for us.
Yeah. Good luck with that, especially after this summer. And if, God forbid, an ISIS figure does come through that.
Or when, Ebola.
Or Ebola.
Take your pick. There's no shortage of problems.
Yes. Jim, we'll leave it there for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.